All right, let's lock things up. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Get the local view, the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Check what's on his mind. Pick up a copy of the paper. Flip to the sports section. Jump on RegisterGuard.com, DuckSports.com, on Twitter, at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how you doing?
I'm good. So can we all just skip it together? Can we go do something, go hang out instead of going to the Oregon game on Saturday?
Strength in numbers. We'll be drinking beer and shooting pool and darts and watching games. That would be entertaining.
Power to the people!
Wow. So I've heard from, it's not a lot, we are a small market, four people on text that know you're coming on today who are Kansas City Chiefs fans, and they're checking in to make sure, because they're superstitious, that the day before Halloween especially, that we mention them to keep the good luck going. So they beat Denver. What kind of sports joy are you now getting week to week from the Chiefs?
Well, I'm glad to hear that there are some other Chiefs fans around here. I do run into some people occasionally who have, you know, Chiefs or Royals gear, and it's always fun to run into those people. So I'm glad they're listening to the show. I tell you what, if the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, we'll make this happen. Any Chiefs fan who listens to this show will figure out a way that we can all get together and watch it somewhere in Eugene if they make the Super Bowl. I'm getting way ahead of myself here, I know. But the Chiefs also have that big game with the Rams coming up in a couple weeks, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, it's always fun to beat the Broncos. There's no better feeling, aside maybe from beating the Raiders, than getting a win over the Broncos.
Yeah, I was looking, and unfortunately, you know, it would have been neat if the Super Bowl was in like the Bay Area or L.A., but it's Atlanta, so that's going to be tough. They're at the Browns, so we'll continue this talk on Election Day. So, Chip Kelly's coming to town, and you were not here. You just missed Chip by a year or so, I think, maybe 2 years. And he was the first coach who really decided that you could be watching a football game, a guy could get hurt, they could take him off the field, and it'd be like, you're really not going to ask me if he's hurt, are you? So, you wrote about it. He still got that little coy, pun intended, chip, doesn't he?
Yeah, I watched his meeting with the media yesterday, and it was classic Chip, or you know what I understand classic Chip to be, because like you said, I didn't get the privilege of covering his teams when he was here. I wish I had, but I didn't. But certainly, I've heard a lot and seen a lot, and it seems like in certain ways he has not changed a bit. And one of those ways is how he deals with injury questions. He went through about half a dozen of them in about 30 seconds because his answers were very short when people asked about that stuff. And it was, you know, I was struck by the contrast of Mario Cristobal yesterday basically announcing that Oregon's quarterback was in concussion protocol when nobody even thought to ask about it or it hadn't occurred to anybody that he might be. And Mario Cristobal addressed that right off the bat. So it's certainly a difference in philosophy and one way that Chip Kelly is still Chip in one way that Oregon is much different than it was when he was here.
No question about it. No, not many people know before he became a coach, he was responsible for the missile codes at NORAD, and he gives up nothing. no way around it. We have to talk about Saturday in the desert. After the first half against the Cougs, strong third quarter, but you know they only had a fourth quarter field goal. So really, since the end of the third quarter of the Washington game, they've played well in like one of nine quarters. Either Penei Sewell is the most impactful player ever or something else is amiss. How surprised are you at just this dip the past couple weeks?
Yeah, I am surprised by the way they've just kind of fallen apart since that Washington game. They were riding such a high. And I thought maybe they would have a little bit of a letdown at Washington State, but I certainly didn't imagine they would fall into this kind of funk that they've been in. You know, the Penei Sewell injury maybe is part of it. Obviously, going on the road has been an issue for Oregon, not just this season, in years past, but you kind of thought they'd gotten past that by the way they went down and beat Cal pretty soundly. So I don't really know what it is. It seems like offensively they've gotten kind of predictable. They've started bad the last two games, and I think that's been a big part of it, is they've gotten down early then they've had to get a little bit desperate and get away from what they want to do. First down has been terrible for them. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot of things going wrong, and I just didn't see it all falling apart like it has.
You know, you cited a conversation in your game piece, a couple of Oregon fans in Tucson who were talking Oregon State after their come-from-behind win. But like you mentioned, Chip Kelly, that era, Oregon supporters have grown accustomed to, even if they lose, it's up-tempo, there's some style, it's entertaining. Is it possible the current perception is not only are they not playing well, but they're a bit vanilla and boring?
Yeah, it's you know, the classic double-edged sword, I guess, with the way Mario Cristobal wants to play. Because when it works, like it did against Washington, you love it. And I think, you know, the Tuesday after the Washington game, you and I were talking about, you know, this mentality that Mario Cristobal has and the philosophy, and they want to run the ball, and they want to dominate the line of scrimmage, and they want to be physical, and, you know, it's great. When it works, it's great. When it doesn't work, then it looks, you know, it's boring, and it looks behind the times. And the last 2 weeks, Oregon's played teams that play kind of like Oregon used to play. You know, they spread you out, they throw the ball, they get, you know, up and down the field. And Oregon has just looked a step slow. And so I guess you'd have to say that this identity that Mario Cristobal has been talking about is very much a work in progress. You know, that Oregon's been kind of two different teams this year. When they've looked good, then that you've seen what Mario Cristobal is trying to build, but when they haven't looked good, you felt like, what are they really trying to do here?
No, that's a good point. Continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. You wrote about the John Hunt book about Oregon athletics, the University of Nike, probably not on the best-selling list at the HDC or Knight residence. But
fair to say, yeah.
Yeah, your story from last Friday and a question I've asked each author I've interviewed the past century. So in your research for your piece, what were some of the reasons, I guess, or inspirations that led him to write this book in the first place?
So the guy who wrote this book is a freelance journalist. I think he grew up in Oregon or spent some time in Oregon, and he was covering the basketball scandal in 2014 when those three players were accused of sexual assault as a freelancer for the New York Times. He was covering that story, and what he told me was that his experiences there opened the door for him to dig more into just the, you know, sort of the history of University of Oregon's relationship with Nike, with Phil Knight. So a lot of that ended up in the book. You know, I felt like it was stuff that if you've lived here or if you've kept up on sort of the politics of the U of O, you probably know a lot of that stuff. But some people, I'm sure, found some of that new. And even if you knew the story, it was kind of interesting to me to see how he laid it out.
You know, I was working in news radio and covered the infamous Workers' Rights Consortium mess 18 years ago. And at the time, school president Dave Frohnmayer kind of ticked off Phil Knight by joining forces because he favored the Fair Labor Association. And so apparently at the time, Knight pulled some anticipated donations to the U of O. And the book said that there was included in there $1 million gift to the Fanconi Anemia Research Fund, which the Frohnmayer started because three daughters had the disease. But it turns out that that might not be accurate.
Yeah, well, look, if you know the story of the Frohnmayers, you know what a heartbreaking story it is, what their family's been through with their daughters that had this disease. You know, it's heartbreaking as a parent. You know, I can't imagine going through something like that.
No, my God.
And they have done a lot of great work to try to raise money and awareness about this disease, including starting this foundation. And from the beginning, Phil Knight was one of the biggest supporters of this foundation. So, yeah, one of the parts of the book that got a lot of attention was the idea that that Phil Knight stopped giving to this foundation because of his anger over Dave Frohnmayer entering the U of O into this workers' rights consortium. And I guess, you know, there's some things that have been contested in the book, and it's kind of murky as to what happened, and I don't know that I really know exactly what happened. It sounds like certainly there was a fear that Phil Knight was going to stop giving to this foundation because of that issue, whether he did or not. You know, they've got records of him continuing to give through that period of time. So they certainly have some evidence that goes against what's in the book. So I don't really know. I wasn't there. I think it's an interesting thing to talk about because it does show just how, you know, how power at the U of O is so connected to Phil Knight and the influence of Phil and Nike and all the money that's wrapped up with that. But as to the specifics of what happened, it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, it is. And for those not familiar, first of all, Dave Frohmeyer passed 3 years ago, and all three of his daughters died from causes related to that awful disease. So Austin, when you write a piece like this in 2018, you get feedback from many ways, readers, texters, commenters. I'm sure you run into people at the university. But so what has been kind of the feedback that you've received about this piece?
You know, I think there are people at the U of O, people in Eugene, who have a perception of Nike and the influence of Nike and feel like it's been a negative thing for the university, that the university never should have gotten into bed with Nike in the way that it has. And so I think that's the target audience for the book. You know, they like that. It's kind of red meat for them.
Yeah.
To hear about, you know, all the ways that Nike has influenced the U of O. There's other people, and I guess I would put myself in this category, who think it's been, you know, it's been good and bad. There's been certainly wonderful things that have happened at the U of O as a result of Phil Knight's generosity, as a result of the Nike connection. There's also been ways that the U of O has changed and maybe gotten away from what you feel like the mission of a public university should be. So for me, it's complicated. I don't feel strongly one way or the other. I just think it's complicated. So for me, I thought the book was interesting from that standpoint. But if chances are, if you're really on one side or the other of that debate, then you probably either really liked that book or really hated it.
Yeah. A couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So in about 45 minutes, start the first reveal from the College Football Selection Committee. I know it's a cliche, but now it's interesting with Ohio State losing just three unbeatens among the majors. One-loss team is going. So how would you rank them, Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and then who would be in the running for your fourth, if I'm assuming properly?
Yeah, well, you got the first three, and then, you know, Michigan. Michigan would be up there. Got to see what Ohio State does from here on out, though that loss that they have obviously is damaging. You know, for the Pac-12, there's basically just a sliver of hope and barely that. And you got to love the irony of Washington State being the only team now in the Pac-12 with any chance. And it looks like what's standing between Washington State and being one of the teams, you know, that's in that top four when it comes out is that game at USC, the infamous Woody Dixon Bowl, where, you know, you had the controversial targeting no calls, and people at Washington State feeling like if they would have gotten that call, that they could have won that game and they'd be undefeated right now and they'd probably be in there. So that's some delicious irony there with Washington State, and wouldn't it be fitting if the Pac-12 gets left out of the playoff again, and you can look back at that game and say somehow the Pac-12 office had a hand in making that happen.
That would be just painful irony. By the way, the Woody Dixon Bowl sounds like it should be two high school teams from Texarkana. And anyway, and I want to wrap with this. After winning 108 games, then losing just a game in each of the Divisional League Championship and World Series, clinched them on the road, beat the other two 100-win teams in the majors, how impressive is this title for the Red Sox, and do they deserve to be in some kind of elitist conversations?
Well, it is impressive. I have beef with you because I saw your list of the top five World Series champions. I'll have to read it again. I did not see the 2015 Royals on there.
It slipped.
But aside from that, I thought it was a pretty good list, and I probably would put the Red Sox on there just because, like you said, they basically had as tough a path as you can possibly have. They didn't get lucky. There was no upset that spared them having to face the best teams. They faced the best competition, and they won soundly. Their lineup, their pitching, there were no holes on that team. And the way they responded, that 18-inning game, I was watching that game in my hotel room in Tucson, and to bounce back from that and close out the series the way they did, that was as dominant a team as I think I've probably seen in my lifetime.
No, it's and the pains I went through to have to admit that. But anyway, folks,
you did have a Yankee team on there. I noticed that. So
hey, you win 125 games in a year and crush everything, you're going to make that list. Folks, he's Austin Meek of the Register Guard, at Austin Meek RG. So I look forward to chatting you up on Press Row for the Visor Bowl on Saturday. Appreciate your time as always, Austin.
All right. Well, if you're going, I'll go, I guess.
I'll text you if I'm definitely going. It's still up in the air.
Okay.
All right. Take it easy.
Yeah.